Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
On the 11th of July 2013, the WWE Performance Center opened its doors for the first time ever. So here, on the anniversary of that very day and a few weeks later, Gary YouTube is here with another Gary YouTube as we take a look at all of the Performance Center graduates who went from the PC onto the WWE main roster. I'm going to put them in a tier in terms of how good they are.
Yes, Gary.
Gary.
I'm ready to Gary. Are you Gary, Gary?
I'm ready to Gary. But before we do some Gary, and we've got some rules to lay out in place that I'm going to read out to make sure I don't butcher them. So, for example, we've got people like Charlotte Flair, Sasha Banks, Seth Rollins, Tyler Breeze, who signed their deals and wrestled their first matches before the Performance Center was a thing. So they're not in this tier list, because if we were to do every single person who merely passed through the doors, we'd be here until 2043. Finn Balor, for example. He was basically in his final form when he arrived at the Performance Center. He didn't really, you know, start from the ground up and then become something. Mm-hmm. So he is not in this tier list. We do have about 700 people to talk about, though. So, editor, who is Joel? He has a name. Please hit the intro. So just in case you haven't been here before, we're here to put these Performance Center graduates in a tier list, ranking from the best down to lovely, 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 middle of the road, all right, then just about barable, and then you want to avoid the bin, because then that means the Performance Center has failed you as a process.
Nobody wants the bin.
No, they don't. We start off with Reza and Akam, the authors of Pain. They made their debut in 2016. They went on to become a one-time NXT Tag Team Champion with the pair of them in there, because, you know, you have one single championship, championship belts.
Yes.
Sam Roberts of the Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, he sent that straight to hell. So he did the fact that people call him tag team champions.
Really?
There's only one champion but two belts, yeah. Very pernickety. Anyway, they went on the main roster, of course, and I think their main thing on the main roster was becoming like Seth Rollins' disciples. Yeah. And then the pandemic hit, and that was it.
And that was it. I just such wasted potential with this team, because I feel like they came in to NXT and they were still obviously quite fresh within the rest scene, and they made a really big impact, I thought, against a lot of teams that were really well established, a lot of names that were well established, I feel like, on the indies as well. But on where are we going in terms of, like, is this sort of how they fared on the main roster as well, or are we factoring in the NXT stuff?
I think you have to factor in the NXT
because
stuff as well.
Because that stuff was really good.
It was. I remember them dressing up as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with Roddy Strong as their partner.
Yeah,
remember?
Do
and
you
War
remember?
Games and all that sort of stuff. So I think in terms of NXT, what they were, like the modern day, obviously, they're partnering with Paul Ellering.
Yes.
Obviously going for the Legion of Doom look. Mm-hmm. I think that worked to an extent. And I'm not saying they're in the same bracket as the Legion of Doom and the LOD pop and all, or the Road Warrior pop, sorry, for example.
No.
But I thought they filled their role well in NXT, and it's a case of what might have been before the pandemic hit and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I personally then... Oh, no, I'm already torn, Ross, because I'm like...
Don't be Natalie Imbruglia.
I'm Natalie Creme Bruglia. I'm gonna... Oh...
They all just get them in all right, yeah. Because
yeah,
NXT was good,
right,
main
well.
Roster, what could have been, we'll stick them in all right.
Yeah.
Moving on to Alexa Bliss. Now she made her in-ring debut on the July 24th episode of NXT.
Yeah.
Back in 2014, I think that would have been. Or maybe it was 2013. I forgot to write the date down. It's after the Performance Center open anyway. That means she counts for this list. She spent a while as a manager of the Dubstep Cowboys, as they were affectionately known, Blake and Murphy in NXT. Before, she didn't really do much in terms of being a wrestler in NXT. She was sent to the main roster as part of that sort of inaugural draft, if you want, of the new modern era back in 2016, where she became hip hop and happening on SmackDown, one of the leading lights in the women's division on SmackDown straight away. So I think it's got to be in the best.
I think it's got to be in the best as well.
Or
oh,
do we pull it down because of her stuff with Randy Orton and The Fiend?
No. I don't think we pull it down for that. I think she's been fantastic in doing the best with what she's been given.
Yeah.
She's had so many reinventions at this point with the Alexa Bliss character, and no matter what she does, she always puts 100% into it. And I think for that reason, it's got to be in the best.
I think the best
to still be relevant as well after having so many changes like that, and still sort of, you know, wanting to push forward and out of maybe the things that she's not too keen on, and as we as fans might not be too keen on. I think she's going to be right up there.
I think she's up there as well. Whether it be a face as a heel, or I think she's, you know, a lot more natural as a heel with her, her sassiness and stuff like that. What we saw in 2016, 2017 sort of time. But as a baby face as well, I think she's one of the leading lights of the Performance Center in terms of somebody with no real history in the business before it, walking in there and then walking out as a fully fledged WWE superstar.
Ooh.
Aaliyah signed with, this is unbelievable, this, signed with WWE back in 2015.
What?
At the age of 20. Her television debut took place on January the 12th, 2016 episode of NXT, where she competed in a number one contender's battle royal for Bayley's NXT Women's Championship, which was won, by the way, by Carmella.
Ooh.
Since then, she did some stuff with Robert Stone on NXT.
Oh, do you remember that?
That sort of stuff,
Rhea Ripley in there as well.
Wasn't really very good. She's got to the main roster and done largely nothing. Her highlight was pinning Natalia
Guinness World Record
in 3.17 seconds, is it?
Yeah, something
like that. Aaliyah, 3.17 says, I just pinned you, Natalia. That's how it goes, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Aaliyah, I think she's obviously very young still. She was 20 in 2015.
Yeah.
So that's plus 8. Yeah, she'll just be 28 now.
Maybe she's just not been given something substantial yet to really sink her teeth into. She's been given little bits and pieces here, but it's usually with people who also aren't super hot either at the moment. Obviously, the stuff with Rhea Ripley and NXT, it just wasn't the right thing because at the time, the pairing with Robert Stone, I don't think was getting... Because we're in that transitional period, weren't we, between Black and Gold era NXT and then the new NXT
greatness.
2.1. Yeah, greatness, as some might say on the Cultaholic Wrestling podcast. But I don't think the Robert Stone thing really worked in the Black and Gold era NXT. So when I always saw someone sort of paired with him, I was a bit like, what? I'm not really gelling with it.
But then
Come Tuesday came along.
But I reckon in terms of what we've seen from her over the past eight years, I think it's a bearable case, you know, because you got to think that someone who's been there, I know she's very young when she was signed, but maybe that she's been there that long and being given very little to do in terms of, like, you know, memorable stuff.
Mm.
Is that maybe to do with her and her abilities potentially? Actually, is that harsh to say?
I don't know.
It's
again,
a cart and a horse situation.
I just think we've not really seen enough.
Yeah.
Because, like, all the matches on TV have lasted literally about the same amount of time as she pinned Natalia for.
3.17.
Yeah. So it's like...
Oh, hell yeah. I reckon... Yeah. You reckon bearable? A harsh bearable, but a fair bearable?
I reckon a harsh but fair bearable. Uh-huh. By the way, the attire that she's got on in that picture that I thought was prime... You see, it's like the jacket, like the yellow and black jacket.
Louis Vuitton.
That is some Gucci.
Good old Prada. I don't know. Arturo Ruas is next, who is one of the weirdest WWE superstars of all time. He was signed back in 2015. He made his TV debut in 2018, where he lost to Cassius Ohno.
Oh no!
He had another TV defeat to Matt Riddle in 2019, so going up year by year now. Mm. He was then moved to Raw Underground in 2020, because as you can see from his attire in the picture, that's coming. Oh, it's up there, isn't it? Hello, Arturo. he's a karate man, or some sort of martial arts man. It might not be karate. He was then released in 2021 after a stint in Raw Underground in 2020, and he's made a few appearances most recently, I guess, for us, like, sort of, you know, American professional wrestling fans, as Tiger Ruas on AEW Dark. So I think it's a bin.
I
don't know what the situation was.
I'll tell you something, right? Back when I was getting back into wrestling, NXT was my... like, getting back in
drunk
point, right? I saw this fella, and I was like, he looks pretty hard as nails.
Yeah.
And then he lost. Yeah. A lot.
So well, not like, a lot. You only had like three matches on TV. but he lost every time.
Yeah, he did. He did. He's a get in the bin. I don't think there's too much more to say about him. I think like his presentation when he came out and everything, I think he looked really good, but then they just never capitalised on him. And then that was it. We saw him in Raw Underground, like you said, and he kicked someone in the head, and that were it.
That's all you need to do. That's it, career. Anyway, in the bin. Yeah, it's a harsh one, but a fair one. Hit Row, I think it's a story of two halves in WWE. There was the bit where they had Swerve Strickland as their leader, and the bit on the main roster where they have become nothing more than a joke.
Yeah. It's like, again, another one in NXT. When you saw the whole package with Swerve Scott in there as well,
it worked.
It worked so well, but then you realise he was the reason why it worked so well. And without him, it's not really hit any sort of stride, has it?
Not even any rows either.
No way. Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's hit the bin. It's hit the bin, everybody. because obviously after Flop Dollar did what he did and Michael Cole, for whatever reason, not letting us forget about that, there's got to be some real story going on there for Michael Cole just to see one botch and then just mention it for months on end afterwards.
You'd think so. And it's such a shame because in NXT, do you remember when they used to do the promos and it was like... or like the pre-filmed segments, and it was like them in the recording studio with all the, and Swerve was like rapping and everything over it. I thought that was so good.
Yeah.
The presentation was perfect, and they're just a joke now.
Yeah, they are.
I feel really bad for them, but they're just a joke now.
They didn't get any help on the main roster either, because remember when they first came up last autumn, as we're sat here in the summer of 2K23, they had those live performances in the ring, didn't they?
And they were
awkward
something
as
else.
Bowels.
Yeah, they were pretty bad, weren't they?
Aye.
Oh, Ben. Is it a bin or just about bearable?
I think you got to put it in the bin. I think they've become that much of a joke. I think anything they did with Swerve has been long forgotten.
I think a bin
has been worthwhile. From the bin to presumably the top dollar we go. I don't know why I said dollar there. I meant top thing on the tier list there. Because Becky Lynch, she signed a 2-year developmental deal in April 2013, just months before the PC opened. I know what you're saying there. That breaks your rule, Ross. But she made her in-ring TV debut on June the 26th, 2014. So she counts. It was nearly a year.
Year
of in the PC. Just to run through her accolades, she's a 2-time Raw Women's Champion, a 4-time SmackDown Women's Champion, and the first ever one from the brand split in 2016. She's a 1-time Women's Tag Team Champion with Lita. She won the Women's Royal Rumble in 2019. She is the 6th Women's Triple Crown, and she's won 3 year-end awards. The Female Superstar of the Year in 2018 and 2019, and the Match of the Year for 2018 for Charlotte Flair at Evolution.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Legs drop through the table and that sort of stuff.
Oh, it's the best, isn't it?
It might be
Is it the top best so
we'll
far?
We'll find out at the end of the video, Andrew,
Of course,
who is the best of the best, but it goes without saying.
It does go without saying, just a phenomenal performance.
Just need to say 2019, don't you? First ever women's main event. She won the thing. Mm-hmm. She's a large reason that got there for her work after getting smashed in the face by Nia Jax.
Yep.
That was the catalyst of greatness here.
Again, just like with Alexa Bliss there, fantastic at reinventing herself when it needs to happen too. Mm. Just like always staying on top of the ball to keep herself relevant.
And she just gets it, doesn't she?
She does.
She gets the wrestling. Dabba Kato, this is almost as shocking as Aaliyah, signed in 2016.
Wow.
Made his debut on television at the Greatest Royal Rumble in 2018. He had been Leo Rush's bodyguard type on NXT live events before that in 2018. He had a stint on Raw Underground where he was undefeated for a while before losing to Braun Strowman. And then on WrestleMania 37, Night 2, he debuted as Commander Aziz, and that went nowhere. Then he went to NXT, and it's gone nowhere again. It's a bin situation, isn't it? He's been there since 2016, remember? I remember me and Matthew on the Cultaholic Wrestling podcast, available every Friday on YouTube and where podcasts are available, speaking about a recent match he had. I forget who it was against. And me and Matthew both came to the table saying, we don't often see bad professional wrestlers these days.
Yeah.
But Dabba Kato was definitely one of them.
And you've had people who have been signed not as long as that as well that have come into this. Some of them even not professional wrestlers beforehand either. They come in and they've done such a good job, and unfortunately it's not one of them, is it?
Again,
it's not one of them.
There's got to be a reason, but we can only judge him based off what we've seen on TV, and it's not being good. So
It's not.
Bless him. Anyway, big baldy bastard Baron Corbin signed his developmental deal, get this, in August of 2012, but wouldn't make his debut until September of 2014 at TakeOver: Fatal 4. four-way where he defeated Juice Robinson, otherwise known as CJ Parker, back then. Then he had the stuff with the Lone Wolf, obviously, where he didn't like fellas from the indies, Apollo Crews. Go back to Ring of Honor, even though you've never been there because I just don't care about the indies. Then, of course, after a little feud with Bull Dempsey, I think, where they were beating people up and pinning them quickly. Rhino as well, I think, was thrown there as well. He won the Andre Battle Royal at WrestleMania 32, a United States champion, the third wrestler to have failed to cash in the Money in the Bank briefcase, Constable Corbin on Raw, blamed for the low ratings back at the end of 2018, I think it was, by all the McMahons.
That was so bad.
Then he went on to become King Corbin, of course, Happy Corbin, Bum-ass Corbin, and now he's finding himself again, the real Baron Corbin, with his twin brother Darren on NXT 2.0.
I swear when I watched that video, one of them looked taller.
It's his twin brother Darren. Darren and Baron, the brothers
Darren
of destruction.
And Baron.
But in terms of, I know a lot of people hate Baron Corbin and find him boring, but I think that is nonsense. I think he is entertaining. I think he's the reliable hand you need to insert in a storyline when you need to see someone get beat and make someone else look very good. That's not to mention the fact that Baron Corbin's wrestling, as I think a lot of people realise when he wrestled Carmelo Hayes recently. Mm-hmm. He's a very, very good wrestler with a very, very good moveset. I think he's top tier, mate.
I agree with you. I don't get the hate for Baron Corbin at all. Obviously, when you see it too many times on TV sometimes and you see sort of like the same exact thing, you get a little bit bored of it. And we were seeing sort of that for a while on like SmackDown and everything. But I think he's just a safe pair of hands in the ring. He's a great wrestler as well, like you just said. And another one, I've said it three times now, but great at reinventing himself too when it needs to happen.
He's kind of good. Some of them have been bad.
But yeah.
But Bumaster Happy was a nice gym.
I enjoyed that a lot. I thought that was very fun. King Corbin.
That's not his fault.
It's not his fault.
I hate the fact that when you win a King or Queen of the Ring, you have to become the King or Queen. Yeah, imagine if Stone Cold became King Steve Austin.
King Steve.
We wouldn't be sat here today talking about wrestling, I don't think. Or maybe we're sitting here talking about WCW.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I think.
Top tier in a country.
I think it's the best as well, yeah. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
He's a good lad.
He's a lovely lad. Lovely dog, lovely meat as well. That sounded weird. He cooks lovely meat on Instagram.
I'm sure he does.
Bianca Belair. Blair, I found some information here. Blair, her real name is
Blair.
Her surname is Blair.
Is it actually?
Like Tony Blair.
Wow.
I don't know why I said Tony there. Entered her information into a WWE prospects database shortly after the premature end of her CrossFit career.
Oh, wow.
More of on a whim than an actual plan, she said about putting that stuff into the WWE proposals database when she was interviewed by Herd.
Heard.
H-U-R-D, I don't know. Less than 2 weeks later, while working on phone sales at a flavouring company in Atlanta, she received a social media message from a 20-year WWE veteran called Mark Henry.
Oh!
Who had come across Blair's profile on the CrossFit circuit, saying that she should get herself a tryout, but emphasised that she had to do the work. And after two tryouts, not just one, it took two times, she signed with the WWE in April 2016, her main roster. While she did stuff in NXT, I don't think it went as high as maybe it could do looking back now.
I think it was getting there. It was definitely getting there. Her character in NXT was great because she was somewhere sort of, she was heelish, but she was somewhere in the middle. Because like she was that kind of heel where she'd do some sort of dastardly stuff, but the crowd would still be like, yeah, that's pretty good.
I remember the closing stages of her career in NXT. It was sort of around the time when Charlotte Flair was going down. She got lost in the shuffle of like not predictable, but like a step-by-step thing with Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, with the whole you don't go here thing. That was like the big thing, I guess.
She said. And then, of course, she made a main roster debut at WrestleMania 36, saving the Street Profits from the Vega Boys. Mm. The Vega bus is coming. Angel Garza and Austin Theory, and she hasn't looked back since to go through her cliff notes here. The Raw Women's Championship one time, the SmackDown Women's Championship one time, the Women's Royal Rumble in 2021, and she's got one Bumpy Award, everybody.
What's a Bumpy Award?
I assume it's from WWE's hit social media show, The Bump. Yeah,
of course.
For the best match of the half year in 2021. Now, people lambast us for the culties doing the half year culties. The WWE do them too. So
stick that in your pipe. Official.
And that was for the Sasha Banks match at WrestleMania 37.
Such a good match.
It's another top one, isn't it?
It's another
Surely.
The best. She's absolutely spot on. Yes, I know a lot of people are sort of talking now about maybe a persona getting a bit stale. Maybe we've seen quite a bit of it.
There wasn't much jeopardy, was there?
No, and that's it. And now I feel like maybe if we do inject a little bit of that NXT sort of ferocity into her gimmick at the moment, which I feel like we're sort of getting with all this triple threat stuff with Asuka and Charlotte Flair.
She's kind of turned heel. Kind of, in the way that she's been like having DQs like making DQs and like title matches and whatnot. But she's a justified arsehole.
It's an attitude, isn't it?
It's a justified arsehole.
Yeah, it's a justified arsehole.
The way Adam Pearce has been talking to her and then letting Charlotte Flair do things that Bianca Belair wasn't allowed to do, for example.
I don't blame Bianca.
Yeah, exactly. We're honest. I think it's a wonderful character.
What a bold prick that man is. Disgusting behavior. Yeah, she's great. She's
fantastic, yeah. Braun Strowman signed his developmental deal in early 2013, but he qualifies for this list because he wouldn't make his debut, his television debut, as well. He signed as Braun Strowman initially in NXT.
Did he?
He was called Braun Strowman. And then on June 2nd, 2015 is when he wrestled a dark match as Braun Strowman against Kenneth Johnson. Then August 2015, he just went straight to the main roster as Braun Strowman. He debuted with the Wyatt family, of course. He was then moved to Raw in 2016 to get a singles push. On his lonesome, he had squash matches against a load of jobbers like Mr. Knoxville. I've forgotten his name. Was it Johnny Knoxville? Well, I like big sweaty men. He had black hair. His gimmick and ran with it. Vince McMahon's big sweaty men, etc. So thank you very much, that jobber. Obviously went on 2016 getting that singles push. The 2017 stuff with Roman Reigns, where he's just trying to murder Roman Reigns.
Yep.
Pushing over big lorries and whatnot. Having a grappling hook in 2018 while feuding with Lesnar and Kane, pulling stuff down. It was all wonderful stuff. Then he got the Universal title from Goldberg at WrestleMania 36 in the pandemic. He's got the Intercontinental Championship one time. He's got the Raw Tag Team Championship two times with Nicholas. How you doing, Nicholas and Seth Rollins, which I can't remember at all.
God, I don't remember that either.
He's got the SmackDown Tag Team Championship No One Contender Tournament 2023 with Ricochet. I don't know why that's on Wikipedia. Wikipedia, the best source of information on the internet. He won the Greatest Royal Rumble, of course, the Men's Money in the Bank, the Andre Battle Royal in 2019, and he won a Year Award for Male Superstar of the Year in 2018. Now then, is this interesting or what?
This is quite interesting.
Because it doesn't feel like it should be a top one, but just because he is that massive.
The accolades as well.
The accolades are there. I thought the storylines and character were there in 2017, especially when he was just pulling over big things and pushing over big lorries. It went a bit haywire, like, in the pandemic, when he shaved his hair and became a train.
He sure did become a train.
He made sound effects like a train.
Woo woo!
But you've got to say it's the best, hasn't he? He's one of the most over products from the Performance Center, I think.
Definitely, and especially when he came back to WWE recently as well. Like, the crowd are just all there for him. And yet, it might not be the best in terms of in-ring style and what he can do.
When you're limited to what you've got.
And I think his transformation as well from, like, his previous physique to his current
shredded
one is insanity.
Shredded.
So I think you're right. I think looking at sort of the accolades there and how the audience reacts to him, it's got to be up there, hasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
And he's done such a broad range of different things, like with the Wyatt family stuff, Nicholas, of course, as well, and then sort of the stuff that he's doing now. Go on, then.
He has been good.
We'll get him in there.
He has been good, hasn't he?
He has been good.
And he went on Twitter and got himself in the tag team with a person he didn't much like.
And it worked out pretty well.
The little floppy floppers.
The little flippy hip-hop floppers.
Josh Bredel is next up on the list because he's obviously known to people as Bronson Matthews after becoming the 2015 male winner of Tough Enough, winning a one-year deal worth $250,000. Obviously, he's going to be the next big thing, isn't he?
Yep.
He was known as the Yeti because he made a noise.
That's like Chewbacca.
In 2016, Bredel, he made a tweet referencing the lower card stable, the Social Outcasts, as the Social Jobbers, and that would be the end of them. Apparently, it caused backlash from the superstars in the locker room, including the likes of Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens were cited on Wikipedia, and Bredel was then temporarily banned from the NXT locker rooms as a result of this tweet and wrestled his final match on July the 7th, 2016. He was released from his contract over, November the 5th, 2017, which was the launch date of Cultaholic.
I don't understand how it could irk the locker room because, I mean,
respect, isn't it?
I guess for someone who's not really established themselves, I guess, yeah.
It's all right for fans to speak like that, but imagine if you're in the rest of the locker room and you're going, you're a jobber. You don't have the main eventers without the jobbers, do you?
No.
Making the main eventers look good.
I mean, this man became the ultimate jobber, if you think about it, really. It's got to be in the bin. Nothing really came of it,
considering he won Tough Enough in 2015... He's got to be
he's got to be.
It's all his own fault. I hope he's all right now, though.
Yeah.
Bull Dempsey signed with the WWE in June 2013, but wouldn't make his debut until September, which means it was after the Performance Center opened, and he's in this tier list where he was defeated by Aiden English, which was a shame for him. Then he became a super serious tough man who I remember back when I first started content creating on the wrestling back in the late 2014, he was like, he was associated with chains and big tires and in junkyards and stuff like that.
Bull.
He was, aye. Bull, bull, bull. He had a banging theme as well with nice riffs and the guitars and whatnot. Then he had a little feud with Baron Corbin because they both beat people really quickly, so they would have a feud over who could beat people the quickest. Then he became a lovable fitness enthusiast because he was fat, and you got to laugh at the fat men, haven't you, fans?
There was a match, I think it was like Tyler Breeze and Bull as well, and basically the match was Tyler just running around the ring to tire out Bull to finally get him back in the ring to hit like an enziguri or something and pin him.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah.
Ah.
It's a case of what might have been, because it seemed like he had obviously both sides of the coin nailed down, Bull Dempsey, but then he was just sort of released. It felt like before 2017 was even here.
I think it's just about bearable.
I think for the work he did on NXT, it's more than Aaliyah did in NXT, for example. I think he got a pay-per-view match out of it. I can't remember that far back, to be honest with you. It feels like he would have got a pay-per-view match. One of the in-performance center pay-per-views. The network specials.
Yeah.
I thought they got one of those matches. I used to have a Bullfit T-shirt.
Did you?
There's footage of me on the old Places YouTube channel back in 2016 or 15 with a Bullfit T-shirt on.
I do think he had like all the makings to sort of, or at least like the look and everything and the presentation was like spot on. Some of his matches I felt like were a little bit touch and go here and there. Some of them were all right, and then some of them were a bit like but. I think just about bearable. As you said, I think he's done more than Aaliyah.
Mm-hmm. Even still.
We'll put him in there. Even still. Put him in there. There we go.
Carmella applied to be a part of Tough Enough all the way back in 2010, but apparently withdrew from the selection process after she became a Laker girl.
A Laker girl?
Moving to the LA bit of the America and whatnot. She then signed with the WWE in June 2013, just before the PC opened, but made her TV debut in September 2014, where she was a hairdresser for Enzo and Cass. Then she became their manager for a little while. And I think it's pretty much a case. I think she did more wrestling than Alexa Bliss, but it's pretty much the similar sort of case where she was a manager by and large in NXT, did a little bit of wrestling more than Alexa Bliss, then went to the main roster as a bona fide wrestler.
Yes.
Her first match was against an unannounced opponent that Enzo and Cass called Blue Pants, which is, we all know where that one went, don't we? She then moved to the main roster as part of the draft in 2016 in the summer of that year and hasn't looked back. She's a four-time 24/7 champion. She's a one-time SmackDown Women's Champion, a one-time Women's Tag Team Champion with Queen Zelina. She's won the Mixed Match Challenge Season 2 with R-Truth. And the Women's Money in the Bank in 2017, which produced the most infuriating cash-in of all time, with Mike Chioda not understanding the rules for whatever reason. And, of course, the WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal in 2019. And in terms of, like, character reinvention, in terms of, I always remember one of the New Day's podcasts just saying they always love working with Carmella just because she got wrestling.
Yeah.
She understood, like, you know, the nuance of just putting on a bit of a show for a segment on a wrestling show. So I think she's in the best person.
All round, she's the best. She can do it all, can't she? She can do the managing stuff, like you said, single star, like you said. She's good on the mic. She's like a perfect heel on the mic.
Dance breaks, remember that?
Dance breaks, they were great. tag team as well. You put her in a tag team, she usually, you know, does really well in those too.
She's got a case of the Baron Corbins, you know, a bit underappreciated.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. She's got to be in the best, hasn't she?
Got to be. She's done it all.
She's done it all.
Cesar Bononi signed with the WWE in 2015. He made his debut in May of 2017, where he lost to Aleister Black. He got his first win on TV against Andrade Cian Almas, I beg my pardon. He was named the future star of NXT in the Year End Awards in 2017.
Wow.
2017. He then spent the rest of his days as a jobber in NXT, and most recently, of course, we've seen him rocking up in AEW. For a man that big and beautiful, it's a bin for me, you know.
It's a bin for me.
He's
as well.
Got everything apart from something to do with wrestling.
He had the perfect look, but then in the ring it kind of just fell apart a little bit. Yeah. I thought. I feel like he was in a tag team with Arturo as well for a little while. I think they sort of teamed together for a little bit.
They're both Brazilian, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think your man already in the bin there was called something different at one point in NXT as well, and they were on a team, and then again they just used to lose like everything. And
he was called Martial Arts. Like M-A-R-S-H, yes. Martial Arts. I get it.
That's I think it's a bin situation as well.
How does that not become a main roster guy?
It's insane because, like I was saying, the look of this man is like something WWE, especially Vince McMahon, like back in them days, salivate over.
Yeah. Chad Gable signed with the WWE in November of 2013 after his stint, of course, in the 2012 Olympic Games, and made his television debut on January the 8th, 2015, where he lost to Tyler Breeze. Then he got himself a little towel, a little catchphrase, and gave Jason Jordan all the character in the world as the American Alpha tag team. It's true.
It is
Jason
true.
Jordan was floundering. Then he got together with Chad. Chad was being annoying. Jason didn't quite like Chad.
Yep.
Then they got together and magic happened.
It did.
Then they had like a good run as a tag team in NXT. I remember a takeover match against FTR.
Oh, yeah.
The revival back then. It was fantastic. That was in London, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Oh, London. Then he went to the main roster and he should have become Kurt Angle's son, but for some reason they went with Jason Jordan.
Why did they do that? It was there on a plate for you. And you mess it up, you idiots.
Idiots. We'll not talk about the Shorty G days because that was horrible. He got bullied, by the way, just in case you weren't watching wrestling, then I can't blame you. He got bullied by Baron Corbin. He was called Shorty G because he's smaller than a bigger wrestler.
Yeah.
So he got called Shorty G. Then instead of just batting away this horrible nickname that a bad man professional wrestler gave him, he embraced who he was and started calling himself Shorty G. Because that's how bullying works.
And pushed through it. His matches throughout the whole entire time he's been in WWE have been phenomenal, haven't
he? Was wrestling Sheamus, wasn't he, around the Shorty G times?
So
even then,
good.
Yeah. Was there a Rumble kickoff show
ringing
a bell
in
my head? Yeah, something like that. And now he's obviously been doing great things with Otis as the American Alpha on Monday Night Raw. American Alpha?
No.
Alpha Academy. Beg me pardon. With Maxine Dupri and all that sort of story where they're learning her to wrestle and she's doing wrestler moves and whatnot. In terms of what he's won, an NXT Tag Team Championship with Jason Jordan, Raw Tag Team Championship 2x1. Name his first Tag Team Championship partner. I dare you. I dare you to do it. I don't think you can do it because I couldn't do it without looking at me.
Oh, then I can't. If you can't, I can't.
Bobby Roode.
No.
Bobby Roode.
Oh, God, I remember that.
They gave him a little robe, didn't they?
Yeah, I completely forgot about that. I scrubbed that from my mind for some reason.
And Otis, of course, last year, and the SmackDown Tag Team Championship one time, I think it was the early days of the brand split, 2016 sort of time, with Jason Jordan. Before Jason's obviously unfortunate injury, which he hasn't been back in the ring since.
He hasn't.
But in terms of Chad Gable, I don't know if it's top tier yet.
Oh,
it can't be, can it?
It can't, can it?
Because he hasn't been... we always say on this channel, me, Matthew, you always say the same thing. It's always like he should be in the main event scene. He's got everything.
He should
He's
be
an Olympic wrestler, for goodness sake. It doesn't matter that he's small. He could rip your head off.
Even in the upper mid card.
Yeah.
Go for that IC championship or something like that.
But it's definitely a case of like he's been working the best stuff with what he's been given. He's been making chicken salad out of chicken you know what for a long time. So I think it's at least lovely, lovely. I think it's a step above the Authors of Pain. Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Step above the Authors of Pain for sure. All right, then. I'll say lovely, lovely, lovely. I just want to give him his dues.
I know. So do I.
Dues, you know what I mean?
We've got to be fair.
We've got to be fair. He'll get there eventually.
Hopefully.
We'll redo this again next week.
It'll be ridiculous if he doesn't get there. Then we have Enzo and Cass, who debuted on TV in May of 2013, just before the PC opened, which means I'm breaking my own rules, apparently. But by the time they got together as a tag team, it was July of 2013, so it counts, all
it
right?
It counts.
When Enzo returned from a broken leg in 2014, it was that story of him trying to do something with FTR, wasn't it? Like, he was saying, like, oh, I can do the wrestling. Then he tried to do a move, and then he broke his leg and proved he couldn't do the wrestling. It was all magic from June of 2014, which is why they're in the tier list today. They had the wonderful tag team run with Carmella in NXT, where they just proved they were one of the most popular things in the company, never mind just NXT. Got the main roster, the stuff with the Dudley Boys, the promos from Enzo were good, and the hot tags from Big Cass were good. It was all flying. Then they got split up. Then there was Enzo's run as the Cruiserweight Champion, which I thought was good.
I thought he was a perfect, horrible man for that, that role that he was given.
Him and Pac were the only two with gimmicks, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. Yeah, they were.
And they held up the prop of the division at either end, I should say. And then obviously after sort of what, I don't know, what happened outside the ring, he got released and hasn't been sort of back in the company since.
Yeah.
Big Cass, on the other hand, he sort of had that singles push in 2017 where he was really tall and Daniel Bryan was really small.
Yep.
Because Daniel Bryan's really small in relativity to Big Cass, they had like a little person come out dressed as Daniel Bryan.
But makes sense, right?
Great television.
Makes sense.
Great television. I'm glad those angles have gone. It was crap, wasn't it? Really boring. Then just that the run sort of just petered out. They had the world at their feet, it seemed, and then for one reason or the other, it just didn't kick on like it should have.
Yeah, they had lightning in a bottle, didn't they, for for a while, especially when they came to the main roster. Do you remember the pop when they debuted as well?
Oh, yes. Oh, I was there.
Oh, my God. You were there.
The night after WrestleMania 32,
no,
I was there.
No way.
Oh, it was loud.
I can't even imagine. Yeah, that must have been so good. What do you reckon?
Was that the night after WrestleMania 32 or 33? Have I just made that up? I remember looking at them. I might have just dreamt it. I'm sure it was the night after WrestleMania 32. Anyway, I think in terms of...
I think...
It's got to be...
Above Authors of Pain.
I'm going to propose something. I reckon
propose me?
I reckon we put AOP down a category and all writers were Enzo and Cass are.
Oh, so we put in AOP in just about bearable.
Is that too harsh on... No, that's too harsh on them, isn't it?
I think Enzo and Cass are at the top of all right.
Yes,
so they're still, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There we go.
What a shame.
What a shame.
Eve Marie answered a casting call from the WWE after a four-week tryout in early 2013. She then signed with the company. She appeared on Total Divas, of course, before doing the wrestling, then made her main roster debut on the July the 1st, 2015, I think it was, episode of 2014 episode of Raw, in a backstage segment where she did some things. Then she had the sort of, I guess what people mainly remember her for was going back to NXT. Mm. She eliminated Asuka from a Battle Royal while Asuka's undefeated streak was going on, so Eve Marie ended the streak
in reality,
never forget. And then she went to the main roster and got stuck in traffic a lot.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful gimmick.
Yep.
They knew she couldn't really wrestle as well as the other wrestlers on the roster, so let's play up to that and have her annoy people by getting stuck in traffic.
And that, like, her, that sort of part of Eva Marie is fantastic. Mm. The all the character work stuff, the wrestling, not so much.
You can't all be good, can you?
No, that's it. But like, if they're just sort of just more, and I guess they sort of did because
play
they kind
to
of,
her strengths.
Yeah, they kind of avoided trying to get her in the ring as much. Is what bloody hell fire? What was going
Someone
on down there?
Screaming downstairs. Picked up the microphone.
That's what it felt like. They tried to keep her away from that as much as possible. In that they knew, like you said, they were just playing to her strengths more. She was perfect in that role, but yeah, just not in the ring.
And even when she made a return more latterly in the modern day, just after the pandemic, well, during the pandemic, just after the pandemic, somewhere around that
somewhere
period
around
of time. The gimmick with Doudrop was good, I thought. Her, like, Eve Marie just exploiting Doudrop because she's big and powerful, and calling her Doudrop because she didn't think she was beautiful as she would do as a professional wrestling heel. Once again, it was let down by the fact that Doudrop embraced the name that was given to her by a bully. That never worked. Stop doing that, man, for goodness sake. So even that played up the Eve Marie's strength in the promos and whatnot. I mean, it's not the world's greatest promo, but it's better than the wrestling.
It is 1,000% better than the wrestling.
But in terms of what she actually did in the company, I'm leaving this one completely up to you.
Leaving it up to me? I feel like a lot of people would go straight to the bin, you know?
No.
I feel like a lot of people would go straight to the bin. I'll put her in just about bearable.
Yeah, I don't think it's bin worthy.
I don't think it's bin worthy. I feel like, because we've got Aaliyah in just about bearable, right?
Yeah.
Way better in the ring.
Eve has done more than Aaliyah has.
She has though, hasn't she?
World record aside, of course.
Thinking about it. I mean, she did, like you said, she ended Asuka's undefeated streak there as well.
Never forget.
She have a Guinness World Record?
No.
She doesn't. She goes there.
I agree with that. I don't think she's been worthy. She actually did some things. Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir have grouped together because they were a tag team in NXT. They were signed alongside... Well, they both signed in May of 2018. They both made their debuts at Evolution, helping Shayna Baszler win the NXT Women's title against Kairi Sane. The main stuff in NXT was basically interfering on Shayna's behalf, not much more apart from that. There was a couple of Raw Underground appearances during the sort of lockdown times. Mm-hmm. And that's it. They were both released in terms of one of the big lockdown releases that happened, which is a shame, obviously, considering they didn't get to do much. I'm obviously not seen Jessamyn Duke do much wrestling outside of that. Marina Shafir has bored me to tears in NXT.
They're tagged
on NXT, on AEW. Sorry,
I was about to correct you, but I was like, I won't be rude.
You can be rude.
I can be rude.
Spit in my face, Andrew.
Again, I thought this team, you know, like the four horsewomen sort of group with Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler sort of in there as well. That could have been something really spectacular within Black and Gold NXT, and we never got that. Their tag matches together in NXT as well. Boring. Very, very boring.
It didn't really do
much,
did it?
They were great. I'll tell you what they were really good at. I thought they were really good at selling the moves that the wrestlers were doing to them, but them delivering the moves, because they were still trying to sort of employ that MMA style.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't think it worked too well. I don't think it gelled too well with the wrestling side of things and sort of playing to the camera and everything like that. So, is it...
I think it's been, you know,
been situation.
For all the promise that they had of being, like, you know, MMA ladies.
Yeah.
In terms of what Shayna Baszler, I know Shayna Baszler had a bit more history, like, in wrestling before she went to NXT, but I think it's a bin-worthy.
Although, Marina Shafir, fantastic little sun hat that she had on Raw Underground. I thought that was great.
She did have a nice sun hat.
She did have a nice sun hat. Yeah, it's got a... Yeah, it didn't work for me.
Next up, we have the Cowie Girls of Katana Chance and Kayden Carter. Carter signed with the WWE in 2018 after she took part in the Mae Young Classic. And then Katana Chance signed with the WWE in 2017 after a stint on Ninja Warrior.
She were dead good in that, weren't
she? Aye. And she had a little appearance on the Royal Rumble of 2019 where she did the thing up the ring post.
Yeah.
She was all looking good then. They got together as a tag team in September of 2020 and only made it to the main roster earlier this year, of course, where they've shown flourishes of what they can do. They should have happened a long time ago. They were spinning their wheels for ages in the rainbow halcyon wonderland that is NXT 2.0. They were way too good for that division.
Yeah.
Their tag team offense is fantastic. I think it's obviously going to be tampered because they haven't done too much as we're sat here right now. But if we're sat here in a couple of years' time, surely they're going to be towards the top, if not the best.
Yeah, they're so good together, so athletic. Like, I know with a lot of the women's teams sort of we get on the main roster now, I don't want to sound bad. The athleticism is on another level for them, at least, anyway. That's kind of what I'm trying to get at. The flips.
The 450s.
All that kind of... That 450 she does, and then the neckbreaker thing at the same time. That's so good.
They've got so many tag team tandem moves, which is wonderful to see for what was, I guess, at the start, a sort of a makeshift tag team.
Yeah.
And now they've fully become the modern-day Hardy Boys.
That's exactly what we're branding them as.
Yes,
we
are.
They've got to be in...
I think it's, at the minute, top of all right,
I think top of all right as well.
But again, that's going to change, you'd think, in the...
Yeah.
The not too distant future.
No, fingers crossed.
Lacey Evans signed for WWE back in April of 2016. Then she first appeared on television at the start of 2017, where she teamed with Sarah Logan in a tag team match where they lost to the Iconics. In 2018, then she started to move up through the gears. Wah, tish. And that December, she was one of the six NXT wrestlers who was going to shake things up on Monday Night Raw. Remember when they used to put them in their nice little grid and then say, oh, they're going to shake things up?
And then things sometimes don't happen.
They left the cap off the bottle and it went flat.
Yes.
So obviously she's done stuff with, she was sort of like against Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins to begin with.
And the Baron Corbin thing, they had that match, was it Extreme Rules where had the Extreme Rules
Corbin
match?
Did the End of Days on Becky Lynch. And then apart from that, obviously her debut stretch was infuriating because it was just her walking out and then walking away again. Remember those days?
Oh my God.
It went on for months. I don't know what they were doing. And then apart from that, it's been reset after reset after reset. She was a heel, then a baby face, then a heel, then a baby face, then a heel. Then Operation Cobra Kai happened.
Yep.
Now nothing. Nothing's happened. It's very much because I thought her is like the old sassy Southern Belle.
That was the best bit.
Yeah, I thought her doing that. I always mention it, but there was a vignette she did on social media where she went to an old people's home. I don't know if she knew
and
someone
she
in there.
Sparked them all.
No, she was just stood at the window, like lifting her skirt up a bit to show her thigh, going like, "Oh, you're never gonna get this," to these old people in the home.
Heart attacks.
I thought that was genuinely hilarious.
Gee, I don't even remember that. That was
just
pretty good.
It was just on Twitter or something like
good.
That. But I think it's bearable.
I think...
For what she is and what she can do, and the character work obviously is a lot better than the wrestling.
The sassy bell stuff, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think now, I just don't think it really connects with anybody at all. Not even like...
The army
she
stuff.
Just gets lost. Like when she's out there in a match, you can go back and like watch stuff on YouTube as well, like the clips and everything. In those clips, people will always be talking about the other person rather than Lacey Evans. I feel like she just gets lost now with the gimmick that she's in currently.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why UnitedHealthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I think it's just about bearable.
I think it's bearable. Watches the chat. It's not. Maybe it's not even her fault. It's just the fact that she comes back. This is over the past couple of years as well. She appears and she's a baby face. Then it's a reset. It's just something different, but the same. It's like only like slight tweaks, and you can't quite work her out, can you?
No. I don't really know. We'll see. We'll see what happens with this sort of army gimmick thing. But again, I don't think it's really connecting with anybody at all.
And by the way, Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
Load of bollocks. He wasn't even in the army, was he? He's having a go at her. She was in it, for goodness sake. Anyway, Lars Sullivan signed with the WWE in 2014. His TV debut came under his real name of Dylan Miley in April of 2017, before he was named Lars Sullivan a few months later. November of 2018, that's when the vignettes of his arrival on the main roster started happening, before his TV debut on the main roster in April of 2019. Then he got released because of reasons. He got a 5-star match in NXT, and the ladder match, of course, 5-star Lars. Mm-hmm. It felt like he had the world at his feet because he looked like Shrek. Yeah. He was a big, powerful man. Vince McMahon likes big, sweaty men, all that sort of stuff. I know the promos where they try to humanize him a bit were weird.
I thought he did all right with what, because some of those promos were word-wise, the stuff that he'd been given was a bit atrocious.
This is when he was going through, like, he'd been bullied, and that was the reason.
But I think with what he got, because it was just like a block of Wensleydale cheese was just shoved straight in front of him, and like,
ooh, tasty. Yeah,
present this in a way that I guess people would believe it a bit more. I felt like he didn't do a bad job with it. He didn't do the best job with it, but I feel like he stopped it from going into that sort of like tropey kind of territory that you sort of know when people are like, I was bullied when I was a kid and now look at me, I've got muscles. Like, I think he sort of averted away from being like too tropey, like I said. But
the fact he looked so different though and was so massive.
Yeah.
He didn't fulfill any kind of potential, did he?
No.
And it was his own fault, obviously. I reckon either bottom of all right or bearable, one of the two. That's where I would go.
I agree. Put him in bearable.
Lovely.
There you go.
Delightful.
No, bearable, not lovely.
Lovely. Riddick Moss signed. Now this is unbelievable as well. Signed all the way back in 2014.
No.
9 years of Riddick Moss in the WWE. His television debut came in May of 2015 when he worked as an enhancement talent alongside Elias Samson, as he was known back then, in a defeat to Blake and Murphy. 2016, he teamed with Tino Sabatelli, the Mole.
He is the spyman.
The AEW spyman. Because he spied. What was he doing? He was leaking
information about stuff, right?
Allegedly.
I think it was like in terms of like Eric Bischoff or something turning up on AEW, I think he leaked it. And
allegedly. But they were called the God Gifted Athletes. I never remember that one on TV. Do you?
No.
January 2020, he became Mojo Rawley's offensive lineman on the main roster. He looked like an absolute beast on Raw Underground. Then he became Happy Corbin's lackey, which was, I guess, the highlight of his career so far.
And now he's become
bland babyface number 5 in blue pants. He's engaged to Emma, which is fair enough.
That's nice.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats.
They're kind of an on-screen pairing at the moment, but not really. I haven't really seen them for a little while, as we're sat here in July of 2023.
That's a good point, actually, because they started pushing that, didn't they? And then it's kind of stopped.
Because she was like the heel manager, but he was like still a babyface and didn't realise it or something. So yeah, it's a strange one. It's his highlight was definitely when he was with Corbin.
Yeah.
As the offensive lineman.
Offensive lineman with Corbin.
The punch lineman.
Yeah. There we go. We'll get there.
I think it's another case of unfulfilled potential.
Do you know what as well? Like some of the matches that he had with Drew McIntyre, do you remember the one where he got spiked on his head, bless him?
Yeah.
I still think that match was a very good, I think Moss put in all the effort in that match and all the effort in that sort of period of time as well where he was with Baron Corbin.
I tell you what, if we were doing a tier list on superstars hitting the ropes, Riddick Moss would be the best.
Oh, he goes for it, doesn't he?
Oh, he's quick.
Proper does.
Proper bouncy.
Do you reckon? Because it.
I think it's a bearable tier, you know?
I think it's a bearable.
Yeah. But a high up bearable.
I think you're right. I think top, definitely the top of bearable.
He's been there 9 years, Andrew.
You make a good point there.
Nine
you
years.
Sort of put it into perspective.
Where were you thinking, like? Where were you thinking?
No, I was thinking maybe like bottom of all right. Because I still think he's had some good matches.
I'll go bottom of all right if you want to go bottom of all right. I like Riddick Moss. I think he's got chops.
I think he's definitely got something, but they've not just found what it is yet that's gonna push in that extra bit further.
They've tried
with like him going for the IC title against Gunter, but yeah.
Mandy Rose placed second overall in Tough Enough 2015 after winners the recently departed Sara Lee, of course. Rest in peace. And Josh the Wookiee. She signed, but even though she didn't win, Mandy signed a 5-year contract with the company, which was a better deal than the winners got. The winners got 1 year, $250,000. Mandy, a few months after Tough Enough ended, got a 5-year deal.
How does that work out?
Very interesting. On August 17th, 2016, on NXT, she debuted in a 6-woman tag team match alongside Daria Berenato. Do you know who that is?
Nope.
That is Sonya Deville and Alexa Davis. Alexa Davis.
Is that
Alexa Bliss? Were defeated by Carmella, Liv Morgan, and Nikki Glencross.
Oh.
Which is Nikki Cross, believe it or not. On September the 28th that year, she lost her first televised singles match to Ember Moon. Then we had the stuff with Absolution on the main roster with Paige / Saraya. Fire and Desire, the stuff with Otis and Lockdown was fantastic. Oh. Then she became the Reign of Terror 2003 Triple H in NXT as part of Toxic Attraction.
I think she hit her stride in that period.
She pulled it round.
She really
time,
did,
yeah.
Didn't she? I thought she was great.
The matches were good as well. It wasn't just the character work and the sauciness of the thing.
I absolutely agree. Because there was a little bit of trepidation, I think, from people when she went over to NXT just being like, I mean, we sort of seen what she can do, but then I feel like she pulled it out of the bag.
Oh,
she
yeah.
really stepped it up quite a bit. I think she's great. I think she really redeemed herself in that NXT bit. And obviously the stuff with Otis as well was really fun to watch too.
From 2020 onwards, when the Otis stuff was really kicking off.
Yeah.
I think it's been was a very good run for Mandy.
I think I'm going to put Mandy in lovely, lovely, lovely.
I think it's a fully deserved one.
It's a
tale of two halves, and it wasn't much in the first half. And then, as I say, from 2020 onwards, I thought she was very, very compelling.
Yeah, she is so good. So I hope they bring her back.
There was rumours, wasn't there?
There was rumours. I feel like they'd be silly not to do that as well.
Yeah. Montez Ford, he joined the WWE in 2015, and then sometime in 2016, he was put together with Angelo Dawkins to form the Street EPs. Dawkins was signed in 2012, by the way, and was initially sort of a hype man for Sasha Banks, and that's why he's not qualified for this list, because it was before the Performance Center was open, even though he spent more time in the PC than most ever will. Anyway, the pair lost their first tag team match together to the Hype Bros, then were promoted to the main roster in October of 2019, before not really doing too much in NXT, I don't think.
Yeah, not really. They got like they sort of established their gimmick, and I think that was they were sort of figuring themselves out, ready for moving up to
I remember them being more vignettes than wrestling in NXT for the Street Profits. They were a one-time NXT tag team champion, which just shuts me up there completely. A one-time SmackDown tag team champion, a one-time Raw tag team champion, and a member of the tag team of the year in 2020. I think it's obviously a case of what might come.
Yeah.
As well as what has been with Montez Ford, because it has been very good so far.
It's been spot on so far.
But where we're sat now, on the 25th, we're shooting this of July 2023. Last week, he hopped in Bobby Lashley's big limo, didn't he?
He did.
So what's going to happen by the time this tier list goes out?
Well, I'm excited because he was speaking to Carmelo Hayes as well, wasn't he?
Whoa!
Hello.
When was he speaking to Carmelo Hayes?
I thought that was... There was a video that came out.
Was there?
On the socials that was doing the rounds.
He missed that.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Exciting stuff. I think if we've got Chad Gable in lovely, 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 and we're thinking about what could be still.
Yep.
He's got to be lovely, lovely, lovely.
I think above Chad as well.
I think above Chad.
He's done more, hasn't he?
He's done more. He's proved that he can do the single stuff as well, like we saw in the Elimination Chamber. He's got charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent. That's exactly what he's got. And I can't wait to see what they do. I'm excited to see what happens if they do stuff with Bobby as well.
Do
stuff. They do.
Yeah, it looked like I was saying on the podcast last week. It was like he looked like Ric Flair.
What, Bobby Lashley?
Bobby Lashley. Big limo, nice fancy suit. He was a bit like sort of like, hey, let's get in, boys.
Oh, like the, what was it? I think it was like an Unforgiven or something where Ric Flair is just asking ladies to come.
Oh, when he celebrates when he wins. All, is it when he wins the Intercontinental Championship?
Yes, yeah. Pops the champagne in the Viagra. Off he goes.
Bobby Lashley might not do that bit. Buddy Murphy from Blake and Murphy. He signed to the WWE in March of 2013, but didn't make his TV debut until May of 2014, which is why he qualifies for this tier list, where he teamed with Elias Samson in a loss to The Ascension.
Yeah.
He back then would have been the dog's bollocks.
Yep, they certainly were.
Are they still the longest reigning NXT tag team champions? They might be. I can't remember.
They might be, actually.
They might be, you know.
Thinking about it.
Let us know in the comments down below.
Would it be the Undisputed? Were they Undisputed Era? I don't know.
Let us know. The Dubstep Cowboys, obviously, were very, very good, I guess, at making other teams look better than they actually were, because they were fantastic bumpers.
Mm-hmm.
205 Live, Buddy Murphy, even though he was clearly too big for the division.
Far too big for the division.
Really big, muscular boy, but he was in the 205 Live division anyway, and it was good. He got a nice moment at that random Super Showdown thing in Australia, because he is from that part of the world. Then in terms of the main roster, it was the stuff with Aleister Black, and Seth Rollins being Rollins' disciple with the eyeball match. I guess he was involved in that sort of stuff. So, I don't know. It's a weird one, isn't it? Because he fulfilled the role he was given, but could he have been given a different role and pushed on, yeah.
I think he could have. I absolutely love Buddy Murphy, Buddy Matthews. I think he's an incredible wrestler, and I'm always excited to watch him on TV. And it was the same like back then as well. Oh, but again, I'm coming back to, if we're talking about what could have been or what could be, it's still got to be. Is this with it solely within WWE as well?
Oh, yes.
So solely within WWE. Then, because now I'm thinking about the matches he had with Ali in the cruiserweight division. They were unbelievable. The matches that he had with Aleister Black as well.
And Rollins before he became the Messiah.
They were spot on. They were such fun matches and feuds to watch.
I would argue, if we're looking at who's in Lovely, 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 he's not at that level. In terms of what he did in WWE.
Are we saying he's all right then?
I'm saying towards the top of all right.
Ooh.
He could have been used a lot better, I thought, in WWE.
Yeah,
I know the House of Black are gnarly.
they are gnarly. Yes. It pains me a little bit, but I'll say, go on then. No.
I'm happy with that one, are you? It feels weird, because he is obviously very, very talented.
He's
of what he did on television.
Accolades, I guess, as well.
NXT Tag Team Champion.
Yeah. Was he a Raw Tag Team Champion?
Potentially. Maybe. I've not written it down. I probably should have done that. Nia Jax is next up anyway. Signed with Doreen in early 2014. She made her debut on TV in October of 2015, where she defeated a lass called Evie.
Evie?
Who's Evie?
A Pokemon.
No. It's a human lady.
Is it
a professional wrestler.
Evie.
Who is known today. She's on the main roster today. It's Evie. Who is she? Take a stab in the dark.
I'm going to take a stab in the dark. She's on the main roster already. She's called Evie. I'm going for
any wrestler.
I'm thinking about it. Why is it gone? Liv Morgan.
No, Dakota Kai. She was Evie back
what?
In the day.
What?
Well, that was her name, Evie.
Evie.
That's who Nia Jax defeated in a TV debut. She made it clear also back around then that she wasn't like most girls. She flirted with the NXT Women's Championship but never got it, which was against Asuka, I remember, a couple of matches where she challenged for the title. And then it was off to the main roster 2016 as part of the brand split on Raw, I remember being there. I guess her main storyline before the pandemic was the one against Alexa Bliss, where Alexa was taking the piss out of her because of her size.
Yeah.
Won the match at WrestleMania, feel-good moment.
That was a feel-good moment.
But then the bully got the one a month or two later at Money in the Bank, I remember, by cashing in.
Yep. She certainly did.
And then from there, where do we go for Nia Jax? The tag team was Shayna Baszler, of course, which was overexposed as bollocks on the main roster, but it's not their fault.
No.
It felt like every single pandemic Raw and SmackDown, they were there having a tag team match that nobody gave a hoot about.
Yeah. The stuff with Lana as well, with My Hole stuff.
My Hole.
Another highlight.
Up the hole.
Like, again, like, I'm remembering the feel good moment stuff there, and
I was just, it was fleeting though, wasn't it?
It was very fleeting because soon after that, it just like the sentiment towards it just changed again. Sort of as soon as that. Is that finished?
I mean, obviously, Nia Jax is a genius of the business because she played a large part, of course, in creating maybe the biggest women's superstar of all time in Becky Lynch.
Yeah.
And obviously, she meant to do that on purpose.
Meant to do that on purpose.
Not just a clumsy mistake.
So basically, she's done her work and she's gone, right, I'm out. I don't really need to do much else, do I?
Yeah.
Is it a bin?
I don't know if it's a bin.
Just about bearable rate to end.
Yeah, well,
because I guess she's still done stuff, right?
She was naff, wasn't she?
Yeah.
I feel bad for saying that, but she was there for that long.
It's got to be one of these, hasn't it? And the amount of opportunities she was given as well. She was given a lot of opportunities, I feel like, too. And still maybe fell short a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, I'll go with that one.
We're going with that one? Where else were you thinking?
I was thinking maybe All Right, because she fulfilled a role as a heel. Obviously, the women's tag team with Shayna, I didn't like at all, as I say. But I don't know if that was their fault, because it was just overexposed every show.
Yeah.
I'll go with that. Because at the end of the day, when it came down to being a wrestler, she was still making those mistakes that maybe other wrestlers on the roster weren't making.
Yeah. After so many years as well. Yeah. We'll go with that.
We'll go with bearable. We're
trying to be fair.
She was given a lot. Omos signed with the WWE on New Year's Day 2019 and made his debut on television in June of 2020, where he was a massive ninja.
He was a big ninja.
He helped Akira Tozawa in the Anything You Can Do, We Can Do Better storyline between the Streety Peas and the Viking G's. Vikings. From there, he went to team with AJ Styles. There was a feud with Bobby Lashley. He was the doorman for Raw Underground, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, he was. Yeah. And everybody was like, who's that big lad over here?
It's Jordan O'Megbahin. He had the feud with Bobby Lashley at WrestleMania last year. He had the match with Braun Strowman, where Strowman got the tag team and Ricochet because he's like, yeah, I'm big. Down with the flippy guys. Just like Braun Strowman likes to talk. Then, of course, we went on to the feud with Brock Lesnar for this year's WrestleMania. The little feud with Seth Rollins. It's just been a case of he's became an attraction as Paul White will be crying in the corner thinking, that could have been me. Mm. Instead of being worked like a normal professional wrestler, Omos is wheeled in for a match with the intrigue big in. How would this relatively smaller wrestler take down this massive wrestler?
Yeah, and then they always end up doing so.
They do.
Which is a bit of a shame.
Lashley did. Lesnar did.
Rollins did. That match with Rollins, though, I think was Omos' best match.
I enjoyed the Lesnar one as well.
Yeah, oh, the Lesnar one was good as well.
Proper throwback ting.
Yeah, good for what it needed to be between two beefy boys.
Yeah. But it needs... He's lacking a storyline. Mm-hmm. He's lacking wins. So it can't be too high up the thing, you'd think.
Bottom of all right.
And again, the promo time hasn't really been given to him either, so we have to bring that into account as well. Bottom of all right sort of territory.
Yeah, I think bottom of all right as well. I think, like you said, we need to start sort of giving him a little bit more of a character, having beat up more than just local jobbers on the lead up to a pay-per-view for him only then to lose.
Oh,
There's no real threat, is there? Especially against sort of like the top sort of elite tier, maybe upper mid card athletes within the company. It doesn't feel like there's too much of a threat when we get to a pay per view. We're usually a bit like, Omos is gonna take the pin.
Yeah.
So
storyline and a few wins. Because remember when we were kids, we had like Kane and the Big Show, and even when they weren't involved in the title pictures, whenever Kane especially appeared, you're like, oh dear.
Yeah, it's about to go down.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Omos needs a little sprinkle of that. Otis was scouted by Gerald Briscoe and signed by WWE in April of 2016. Tucker, by the way, Heavy Machinery was a thing for a long time. Mm-hmm. He was signed back in 2013 before the Performance Center was a thing, so I'm including him in the list. The first run on TV came with Tucker, of course, for Otis and Heavy Machinery. Then in December of 2018, it was announced that the pair would be making the move to the main roster as part of the shake-up.
Yes.
They then made a horrible, awkward debut. If you can try and find it on YouTube, it's awful, because Lacey Evans comes out and does the walk thing, and the crowd is so silent.
Yeah.
You forget about now, with like the crowds of 2023 being more raucous, how silent crowds were back in those really bad days of 2018, 2017, 2019. Then you had the stuff with the breakup of Heavy Machinery, which was, I think, was worked all right for Otis, not very well for Tucky.
Yeah, poor Silver Tucky. Boots.
Poor Tucky indeed. The romance stuff with the stuff with Chad Gable, both as a heel and a face. It's one of the better ones, isn't it?
It's absolutely one of the better ones, yeah. I think. He's just so endearing.
Yeah.
When you watch him, he's really lovable. I feel like he gets paired with somebody and he also just plays in it, like, to his strengths.
Yeah.
And puts 100% in all the time. And he's just one of the highlights on WWE TV at the moment, which is such a... I feel like it's a weird thing to say for someone like Otis almost.
Nah.
I don't know why.
He's fantastic.
He is fantastic.
He's
captivating. I agree.
He's one of a kind.
Yeah.
Give him that theme by Breaking Benjamin. But I tell you what, even when Alpha Academy starred and they were super serious and they shaved all his hair off and his beard off, I thought even he worked then as a proper serious, like, just big bruising man.
He did.
He can do it all.
He's dynamic, adaptable.
Yeah.
He should be
malleable.
Malleable. He's definitely
porous.
Malleable.
Not porous. He porous soaks up information.
Yeah, like a sponge.
Yeah.
Porous.
No, when he soak it up. Porous is when it goes.
What's the words in the SpongeBob SquarePants theme song?
Absorbable.
Absorbent and yellow when porous is.
He's absorbent. He soaks in everything.
Yeah.
Including the sun's rays.
He does. He's a glowing man.
He is a glowing man. Is it best or is it lovely, 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 though? I'll leave it up to you. It's one of those two tiers.
I'm not all for putting Otis in the best when Chad Gable is in Lovely, Lovely, Lovely.
He's done more than Chad, though.
I'm just saying.
Come on. He's higher up Lovely, Lovely if Chad's there.
I guess he is a Money in the Bank winner.
Oh, yes, he is.
I guess we're going to put him there?
I'll put him there. I'll go with that.
Right.
Raquel Rodriguez signed with the WWE in October of 2016. On May the 3rd, the next year, she made her debut, her first televised appearance, in a losing effort where she was eliminated during the Battle Royal to determine the number one contender for the NXT Women's Championship. On February the 16th, 2020, NXT TakeOver Portland, which is where Bianca Belair had her little with the NXT Women's Tag, the Women's Championship, but didn't get it because it was, you know, the Charlotte and Rhea stuff happening then. She was under the name Raquel Gonzalez. She interfered in a street fight between Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox by slamming Nox through a table, allowing Kai to win the match, establishing herself as a heel in the process. She had a gimmick, everybody. She was called Big Mammy Cool.
She was.
She had motorbikes and leather clothing and whatnot. She was, you know, the stereotypical heavy, the bodyguard of the little heel in front of her. She had a gimmick, though, that was the most important thing, because upon arriving on the main roster in April of 2022, she's lost all of it. She's a 3-time women's tag team champion, once with Aaliyah and 2 with Liv Morgan. Not the current, because they lost them last week, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah, they did.
She's 1-time NXT women's champion. She's a 2-time NXT women's tag team champion with the inaugural ones as well, the first ever with Dakota Kai on both those occasions. Then she was the Women's Tag Team Championship Tournament winner with Aaliyah in 2022 in NXT. Was that on the main roster? Must be on the main roster. The Women's Dusty Classic in 2021 with Dakota Kai. Any more there? That was it. She's lost her gimmick.
I want to just reverse a little bit here, right? We were talking about Aaliyah before. Mm. We're still saying she's just about bearable, actually, remembering that she's had a women's tag team title.
We couldn't remember it.
They kind of just like switch on the fly anyway, don't they?
I imagine Raquel did most of the work in that as well.
Absolutely.
She's the gone getting the push.
Oh, want Raquel to have more
a gimmick.
Of a character
just make
again,
a Big Mammy
please.
Cool again.
She was so good in
Mammy
that role
versus
as well.
Big Mammy Cool is a lot more captivating than Mammy versus Smiley Back.
And that's what we want, because they're best mates, I think, in real life as well. Mm. They're genuine friends in real life. And I want to see that match between them too, but at the moment, if it was Big Mammy Cool, like from NXT going up against Mammy right now, then I'd be a bit more like, ooh.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of, I don't know if Rhea's going to come out of this on top with this one. Oh, careful. But now, with the current gimmick that she's got, I think you're right. It's just...
I mean, you don't know, because she does seem to be heavily pushed. Like, she was
she
always...
She is.
So is that bit of jeopardy for Rhea Ripley even still without the gimmick for Raquel Rodriguez?
And she still puts on good matches. Like, do you remember the women's title match she had with Ronda Rousey, I think over Christmas time, on SmackDown?
Oh, when she did the thing off the top rope.
Yeah, stuff like that. I think she's still, like, mint as a wrestler, absolutely.
Just
it's
gimmick,
just the character.
Yeah.
It's just the gimmick. Oh, I think...
I think it's got to be bottom a lovely, top I of all right, sort of. Because, you know, she's relatively inexperienced even still. Yeah. Debuted in 2016.
And she's still done quite a lot.
Oh, sorry, signed in 2016, not even debuted.
Yeah, I'm going to put her bottom a lovely, actually.
Yeah.
You get
me. She's a good wrestler. It's just a gimmick, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just a gimmick. Liv Morgan was apparently discovered at Joe DeFranco's gym in New Jersey, and then she signed a new first contract with the Dorino October 2014. Her first televised appearance came at NXT TakeOver Colon Rival on February 11th, 2015 as a planted fan who jumped on Tyler Breeze during his entrance.
Plants in yeah. NXT back then as well.
You would never think, would you? October 2015, she briefly worked under the ring name Marley. Would have been a good tag team partner if she had a tag team partner called me. It's Marley and me. She debuted on the November 4th episode of NXT Good and Proper, where she worked as a jobber, and a loss to Eva Marie.
Wow.
On December the 2nd episode of NXT, she made her debut under the new ring name Liv Morgan, where she was like... She lost to Emma, but she had the gimmick of, like, she was the female Enzo in my mind.
Like a Joyzy girl.
A Joyzy girl with the yeah. cap and whatnot and the bit of... Mm-hmm. I remember her theme started with a yo, yo, yo. Remember?
Yeah, I do remember that, yeah.
Then, of course, she got the main roster as part of the Riot Squad, where just everything sort of changed. She became less of a Chava.
Yes.
And more of a gothy...
She, yeah.
Grunge rather than
yeah,
goth,
yeah, like a Harley Quinn type.
Yeah, and now she's in her final form of Sabu a few years on.
Yeah.
In terms of what she's won, she's a one-time SmackDown Women's Tag Team Championship, a two-time Women's Tag Team Champion, and the Women's Money in the Bank in the Bank?
The Bank
in 2022.
And she's a Women's Champion.
She's a Women's Champion yeah. as well, of
Smackdown,
course,
Smackdown,
off the back of that.
Women's Champion, yeah.
Pinning Ronda Rousey, no
yeah.
less.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be towards the top.
I think it's got to be towards the top as well. I think she's now as well on a trajectory that sort of we got her finally winning the championship, which was a big deal. I think a lot of people wanted to see that.
Yeah.
And then obviously there was some booking decisions that made her look a little bit weak.
Yeah.
And people kind of like, I feel like, turned on her a little bit.
And then she lost the plot, became Sabu, and just started doing all these moves off the tables and whatnot.
And now I wonder if where we are at the time of this recording, with her going away with her injury and everything,
yeah.
if she comes back at Royal Rumble, maybe even wins that. Maybe
it writes itself.
It writes itself, doesn't it, for a WrestleMania match between her and Rhea Ripley.
Who used to be tag team partners, of
yeah.
course.
Yeah, so like, there's a bit of a story
like
there.
The sub to Mammy's Dom.
Dom, yeah.
Not Dom, just Dom.
Just Dom. I think you're right. I think, oh... So I think lovely.
I think towards the top of lovely.
I think
yeah.
towards the... Well, I think, actually, I'm going to go top.
Ooh.
I think top of lovely.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Rick Boogs. He lost to Drew Gulak on the February the 6th, 2019 episode of NXT, which was his television debut. Leading up to WrestleMania 37, Boogs played an Old Spice representative character, Joseph Average / the Night Panther. Do you remember that?
No.
In several backstage adverts. Remember, he was like, he put a mask on, the Night Panther?
Oh, I do remember that, yeah.
To advertise Old Spice pit spray and pit rub. Rick Boogs would then make his SmackDown debut a few months later, playing Shinsuke Nakamura mm-hmm. to the ring, where Pat McAfee made him a superstar with his reactions.
Bona fide superstar.
There was a shame of the massive injury at WrestleMania 38, the first match of night one, where they were taking on the Usos, Nakamura and Boogs, where Boogs tried to pick up both Usos and his knee gave way, and that yeah. was horrible. And now he's just lost.
That was his big moment, that wasn't
he's
it?
Lost. He's lost. He's just, that injury completely derailed him. He came back as this weird version of himself where he was Boogs and out and other cringy things that didn't, they weren't quirky enough. On
yeah.
the side of quirky and cringy, it was too much towards the cringe, which I know all about, obviously. That's where I live.
Well, yeah, I live there as well. he's not been able to sort of regain that steam, has he, from that? And that's such a shame as well because... That match at WrestleMania started off really, really good.
Yeah.
I think everybody was sort of behind Shinsuke and Boogs and that, and then, yeah, unfortunately, injury just derailed everything.
Yeah, is it all right? I don't think it's much higher than all right, to be honest with you, for Rick Boogs. I know he's fantastic. I find him very captivating when he's giving good stuff.
Bottom of all right.
Bottom of all right, yeah.
I think
I'll go there.
I'll go there. Because it's better than just about bearable, I think.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see where he would have went with if the injury didn't happen when it happened.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Were they going to win the tag team titles then? They were sponsored by whoever sponsored that match.
Yeah, because...
What was it? Red, orange and yellow?
Lucas are smarter than that, I remember.
Cheetos.
Cheetos, yeah.
Well, I don't know who it was.
No, what... Yeah, it was something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah. Who knows where he could have gone? Anyway, on a pair of wrestlers called Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder, who formed a tag team in 2014 upon Dash Wilder arriving at the Performance Center because they briefly worked together on the Indies back in 2012. Apparently, on day one of Dash Wilder arriving at the Performance Center back in 2014, during a promo training session, Dusty Rhodes was convinced that they need to be a tag team, and the rest has been history. They went from going from chants of like, which one are you? Which one are you, good sir? I can't tell you apart. Those sort of... Was that NXT TakeOver London? Yeah, I swear they happened there.
It could have been.
Yeah, Dash Wilder and Scott Dawson went on to become NXT Tag Team Champions 2 times, Raw Tag Team Champions 2 times, SmackDown Tag Team Champions 1 time. There's a 24/7 reign there for the pair of them. They were a Triple Crown winner for the Tag Team title, the NXT End of Year Awards for the Tag Team of the Year in 2016, and Match of the Year in 2016 for their exploits against DIY. It is, of course, the Revival. It's
unspoken, right? It's got to be at the best.
It's got to be. You think so?
I think so.
Even though, because it's symptomatic of tag team wrestling, what happened to them in WWE. Like, Vince McMahon famously didn't like tag team wrestling.
No. And it's not their fault.
No.
Because they still had the chops. They were fantastic. They had incredible matches in NXT. Yeah, maybe the stuff on the main roster didn't live up to those kind of heights, but
I remember that debut on the main roster where they challenged the New Day, like came out and faced New Day. I think it was Dawson, as he was known back then. Dax Harwood just kicked over the ice cream little bicycle thingy, and I was like, "Here we go,
evil
here
man.
We effing go,
evil man."
And it just came to nothing. There was obviously those plans that were leaked of their new outfits and whatnot. They were shaving each other's backs at one point as well, which is weird, even though I think that's what good friends would do if you can't reach your back. I mean, I wouldn't. Have you got a hairy back?
I got like straggly bits on my shoulders, and that's about it.
I've got an out, mate.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Lovely, silky smooth. But in terms of FTR or the Revival, sorry, I think lovely.
I'm looking at what our options are in the best there.
I think the ones in the best did more, have done more.
Are we limiting them though, just because they're a tag team?
That's symptomatic of tag team wrestling, yeah. It's not our fault that Vince McMahon don't like tag team wrestling. I'd say what would have maybe pushed them over the edge is if that FTRKO stable took off the ground.
Remember
that was flirted with for a little bit?
Did enjoy that. Are we going top of lovely then?
I'll go towards the top of lovely.
All right.
Because you look at where Montez Ford is there. I'd say Montez was higher up than FTR, or the Revival.
Olivia there for now. She's staying. She didn't want to move.
She's politicking. Shayna Baszler debuted as part of the Mae Young Classic in 2017, where she was defeated in the final, by Kairi Sane. On October the 3rd of that year, she officially announced her signing with the company after starting training at the Performance Center. She made a televised debut as a proper, fully fledged PC gal by attacking Kairi Sane on December the 27th of that year. On January the 10th, 2018, she made an in-ring debut, good and proper, defeating Dakota Kai by referee stoppage. She won the NXT title at NXT TakeOver New Orleans against Ember Moon, that lovely Scottish lass. there was one hell of a reign in there as well. She then went to the main roster in 2020, whatever year it was, where she turned into a vampire and then became the only lady ever, or only person ever, to win the Elimination Chamber by eliminating everybody. Mm-hmm. It was all looking good. Then she lost to Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. It was 2020, wasn't it? She lost to WrestleMania to Becky Lynch. She then went away to have a baby, to be a mammy. Then the tag team with Nia Jax happened, which wasn't good, as we spoke about already. The stuff now around the Rousey, business is picking up again.
We're
where she looks
back.
Like being the badass baby face we never thought she could be.
No.
Looking at how evil she was in NXT.
It's weird because she's not necessarily a baby face, is she, for what she's done?
Because
you know, the sentiment towards Ronda. Exactly. I was a huge Shayna Baszler fan. I still am a huge Shayna Baszler fan, but like her stuff in NXT was so good. I thought like her matches were consistently good. The title defenses were consistently good. And I was so excited when she won Elimination Chamber, and then there was obviously all the talk about her winning the Royal Rumble, and then that got changed at the last minute to be Charlotte Flair winning instead. Do you remember? And then she became a vampire and sort of things went.
It's the way she lost at WrestleMania as well to Becky Lynch. She had that. She locks on the Carafuda clutch, obviously, and it's the one reversal she gets done by every single time.
I hope we do. You already know this from just like pictures, videos that we've done. I'm always like, Shayna Baszler, push her to the moon, get her back to where she once was before. Hopefully this feud is going to do it for her.
I was thinking, because there was rumours that Ronda's going to go away for a bit, isn't there? And I was thinking now, maybe Shayna could send her there with a good, you know, good conclusive win. But Tom's put the idea in my head that they could have a DQ that they did on a recent house show in Mexico City. That then could lead to Extreme Rules where there'd be a fight pit.
Oh,
and then maybe Shayna could spaff in Ronda's face and send her away then.
Maybe. Why can't we get the fight pit at SummerSlam?
Because there's already a gimmick match, isn't there? Apparently, Brock and Cody.
Yeah, but we can have multiple ones, can't we? It's the biggest party of the summer, after all.
But Shayna's NXT stuff definitely outweighs the main roster stuff, and it just depends. Yeah. There was a long period of time where she was doing not much.
Yes,
on the main roster.
Yeah.
So it depends where, how far you want to pull that down.
Because, well, my bias is that I think she's great. I'd put her in Lovely.
I'd say top of Lovely, you know?
Yeah.
Just the NXT. Do you remember how good she was as an evil NXT champion that when Rhea Ripley won the title, it was a big moment? Remember it was
Yeah,
like
and then everybody came out.
Towards the end of the year, yeah.
I was watching that episode with me dad. And I was like, hey, she's pretty good.
Oh, shit, what do you do with your life, son?
No.
What's this rubbish? I go down pub, drink pint gravy, see real fighting.
He does. Oh, yuck.
None of this fake nonsense, not that pub. Anyway, that's where we're putting
Shayna. Yeah, she's top right at the top.
Really, really good. Sonya Deville was eliminated third from Tough Enough in 2015. She then signed a contract, probably better than the ones the winners got, of course, based off what Mandy got in October 2015. Her first televised appearance in a ring debut under her real name came on October the 17th, 2016, where she competed in the six-woman tag match I said earlier against the women who have different names to what they had back then, Nikki Cross and Carmella and stuff like that. December the 21st episode of NXT, she competed in her first singles match where she was defeated by Billie Kay thanks to a distraction from Peyton Royce. As I can see the card counting down again, so we'll stop there. May 2017, she was renamed Sonya Deville and came close to a title thing in a triple threat match with a vacant title that Ember Moon won back then. Then we have the stuff with Absolution, the feud with Mandy Rose, her stuff as the general manager, and now latterly as a Karen with Chelsea Green. She's found her calling.
Yeah. Took a bit, didn't it?
Current main roster tag team champion, of course.
Yeah.
I think she's a case of what might have been, because she was a shoot fighty lady before she came to the PC, and she was presented as such as a wrestler, but not really booked like one.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I never really gelled with that gimmick when she was doing that in NXT. I thought,
put your hair up and square up.
Yeah.
Is that why? Because the bald.
What?
Because you can't put your hair up and square. Well,
yeah, so I had hair at that point. I felt like that gimmick there didn't really make a standout against some of the others as well. I don't know what it was. Sometimes with gimmicks, I don't know what it is. Like, sometimes when they try and make you stand out from other people, it almost just also kind of like pushes you back into the...
Wow, philosophical of you. Bloody
hell. I don't know why, but it just never really gelled with me. I think now she's completely turned it around and found her sort of, yeah, like you said before, a call in a little bit.
As a Karen.
But yeah, I guess in terms of what could have been...
I think if Mandy's there, I think, and it's harsh to say, I think maybe Sonya's a step below. But is that too far of a step below, considering the people who are in All Right? It's got to be towards the top of All Right if it is All Right.
I'd go... Ooh.
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 Tough one.
Would we go between Caden and Katana and Enzo and Cass?
I'll go there if you want.
You go there? We'll put her in there.
Why was she the general manager again? She just was, wasn't she?
Why not? But then she was an awful general manager.
It's a bit like Catherine Tate's character on the US Office, where she just commandeered the manager's office and just called herself the manager.
Yeah,
yeah.
It did feel like that.
Nelly. Not on mine, Nelly. Up the Nelly. Veer. Obviously, we're leaving Veer to last because that's when he comes. Veer was signed to WWE on January the 14th, 2018. On the 25th of March, 2020, on NXT, of course, Veer and Sanger and their manager, Malcolm Bivens, made their televised debut. Do you remember?
I do remember.
They attacked NXT tag team champion Matt Riddle, who didn't have his tag team partner Pete Dunne with him, because Pete Dunne would have been locked in England because of the pandemic and that, wouldn't he? The following week, Bivens introduced them as Rinku and Surav while reviewing their tag team name to be Indushare, which means Indian Tigers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know it either until Wikipedia told me. Up the Wikipedia. Then we have, of course, the partnership with Shanky on the main roster, where Shanky became a dancing man.
He did.
If you've seen Shanky, let us know because we're worried about him. Where's he been?
Where's he been?
I don't know.
He's out on the dance floors. That was his true calling.
The city has claimed him now.
It certainly has.
Then he threatened to come all over Raw for absolutely ages, of course, so did Veer. And then before he went back to NXT to reform the tag team with Sanger, they were presented wonderfully well, and injuries got in the way of their feud with the Diamond Mine, which could have been really special because the Diamond Mine are fantastic. And now they've got Jinder Mahal as their manager, Singer? Veer and Sanger. My God.
Singer.
It's been a long
Singer
video.
Singer and dancer.
Hold me closer, tiny dancer. Veer has got to be one of the bottom two tiers.
I agree.
Where does Veer go in the tier?
Where does Veer go from here? I think just about bearable.
Very Veer, onomatopoeia. That's not onomatopoeia, is it?
No. Is it?
I don't know.
No, maybe. No, I don't know. I'd say between...
It's not his fault, is it?
It's not his fault. Because it's definitely the way that he's...
I'm thinking bin, you know.
You're thinking the bin?
When he's appeared on the shows, what's captivated you?
Nothing. That's true.
Sanger had his run as a spiritual man with Yulisa Leon and Valentina Feroz.
Yeah.
In NXT, where he promised them a spiritual experience and then got back with Veer. So he turned heel, in my opinion.
I'll tell you what.
At least Sanger's done something, though. But Veer has just threatened to come all over Raw for ages, which I don't think was by design.
No.
I think they just saw what was happening on social media and thought, we'll just continue doing it. And since arriving... It's just...
At the moment as well, them Indus Shire as a tag team don't feel threatening either. Nah. Like, if they were as threatening as what they are, why haven't they gone for the tag team title, yet?
You know what you need to do? Get Sanger, right, and put him in his little pants and UFC fighting gloves like he was in NXT.
Oh, yeah.
Let his chest go hairy again.
He looked like that.
Horror. Like Sebastian Turkay.
Yeah.
Was that his name?
Yeah, that's his name.
From ECW back in the day.
Yeah.
Sebastian.
Veer looks, and I'll always say this in every single video that I'm in that has Veer in it, just looks like a nice huggable man. He doesn't scare me at all. He just looks lovely.
Lovely soft
beard. And I'm sure he is lovely as well. It's got to be then. I'm going to say just about bearable. I'm going to put him just underneath Aaliyah. If Eva Marie wants to move at it, way. There we go.
I'd have put him in the bin for what it's worth.
Would you actually?
He's been terrible. He's not been worth them. They're not been worth the paper his contract's written on.
You make a good point.
Nah, you leave him there. It's fine. But we must find out now who has been the best graduate from the WWE Performance Center by doing the following thing. This is all down to you, Andrew, of course. Has Becky Lynch made more of an impact, more of a splash on the main roster or the world of wrestling as a whole than Alexa Bliss?
Absolutely.
Has Baron Corbin done more things and made more of an impression than Becky Lynch has?
No.
Has Bianca Belair done more than Becky Lynch?
No.
Has Braun Strowman / Strowman done more than Becky Lynch?
No.
Has Carmella done more than Becky Lynch?
No.
So there we go then. In terms of people who were signed to the company after the PC opened its gates or doors, whatever is on the front of it, for the first time ever, the best thing to come out of it has been Becky Lynch.
Absolutely. Do you agree with that?
Time to come to that conclusion.
All that time. But would you agree, though?
I would, absolutely.
Yes, good, I'm glad.
In terms of the people who, weren't already there when the PC opened their doors, which, of course, the video would be 12 hours long if we did that.
Yeah, it would be.
So, Becky Lynch is the
Becky best. Lynch.
By some distance as well.
Up the Lynch.
Let us know how wrong we are in the comments down below. I have been Gary YouTube, joined by this Gary YouTube as well. And we'll see you very soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.